Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a talk by the recently installed chancellor of the University of Nebraska Medical Center, Jeffrey Gold. Dr. Gold assumed his position at the medical center on February 1st. In his presentation, he'll talk about the institution and about his vision for the future. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, May 29th, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Hugh Cowden, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Today we are privileged to have with us Dr. Jeffrey Gold, the new chancellor since February 1st of the University of Nebraska Medical Center. Dr. Gold came to UNMC from the University of Toledo, where he served as chancellor and executive vice president of biosciences and health affairs and executive dean of the College of Medicine. Dr. Gold is a nationally recognized leader and tireless advocate for transforming academic medical education. I'm a little familiar with this because my son is an anesthesiologist out in Rhode Island. He serves on more than 50 professional committees and more than 100 national organizations, volunteer boards, and public health councils. And he was recently elected to the American Medical Association's Council on Medical Education and the Liaison Committee on Medical Education. He has also served as president of the Thoracic Surgery Directors Association, a national organization devoted to improving the education of resident physicians. As UNMC's chief executive officer, Dr. Gold is responsible for all aspects of campus administration, including its annual operating budget of more than $640 million, a staff of about 5,000, and its 3,600 students. Additionally, the clinical enterprise has more than 6,500 employees and an operating budget of more than $1 billion. He also holds a health professions appointment in the Department of Surgery. He is a board-certified thoracic surgeon and specializes in adult and pediatric cardiac surgery. Dr. Gold earned his medical degree from Cornell University, where he also holds a degree from the College of Engineering, with majors in theoretical and applied mechanics. He has authored more than 200 peer-reviewed articles, 250 national presentations, and 40 books and book chapters. As a retired academic myself, I have seldom seen a resume as accomplished as this one. After his remarks, Dr. Gold will be glad to take questions from the audience. There are pencils and papers on your tables to write the questions, and someone will be around to bring them up here to me. So, please help me welcome to the forum Dr. Jeffrey Gold, the new chancellor of the University of Nebraska Medical Center.
Well, thank you very much. It's a wonderful introduction and a spectacular view, by the way, standing here at midday looking out over the scenery and the landscape of this great community that I now have the privilege of being part of. I think the first and most important thing that I want to share with you is to just tell you how warmly I feel welcomed, and also to here today and to thank you for this opportunity. I know that invitations to join a group like this are not easy to come by, and that I hope to make the time that we spend together relevant for you, but I also hope that we begin to set a stage for ongoing dialogue, as I have with many of the members of the press community here, as it's a really important part of our relationship. I'd also like to take just a minute to thank whoever sets up the logistics for these meetings, because I know that they don't just happen. It takes planning and thought, and it just is worth a minute just to reach out and say thank you to those people. So I have just a few things that I wanted to talk about, and then we're going to leave some time at the end for some discussion, questions, and answers. And so I thought I've looked extensively at this shield. This is the emblem of the University of Nebraska, founded in February 1869. And if you look at it, there are actually seven separate areas that are listed on the shield. And so what I thought I would do is focus my comments in seven different areas. A bit of setting the stage, sharing with you some of my aspirational goals, some early thoughts based upon just over 100 days here in Nebraska, what I think our real challenges are and how that connects to our mission, a few words about our strategic approach, and then to allow as much time as you want today and into the future for setting the stage. So you've heard a bit about my background. That's my academic background. What contrasts that is, first of all, what I am most proud of is that this August will be 40 years that I've been married. I'm married to a physician. Fortunately, she was about 8 when we got married. I wish I was. In addition to that, I have two wonderful children. They're very bi-coastal. My youngest child, my daughter, lives on the East Coast, and my oldest child, my son, now married, lives on the West Coast. So right now I'm right in the middle of our great country. What you also doesn't necessarily come through a bio sketch of this nature is that I've had the opportunity to work as a clinician, as a cardiac surgeon, taking care of adults and children with complex heart disease and, of course, their families, if you have a practice that's predominantly neonates and small children. And I've had an opportunity to do that for many years of my life. I've also been an educator, been a research scientist, have had many, many years of opportunities in leadership roles across the country to advocate for quality of health care. And so I like to think that I've had a very diverse set of experiences that brought me here. I've had the opportunity to work for over a decade on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, one of the most affluent communities in the country, in the inner city of the Bronx, New York, 10 years in Toledo, Ohio, the quintessential Rust Belt of the United States, and now here in Nebraska, which has given me a very wide set of experiences that I think are valuable and they can be built upon. But what I've learned from all of this is that the value systems are the same and that people value high-quality education, they value meaningful research, and they value clinical care. That all rolls up together to form the future of what I like to call academic medicine. Let's talk about the aspirational goals, if I may. People ask me all the time, what are my personal aspirational goals? They're very simple, to change the world. I get up in the morning, and what do I plan to do? Change the world. And I get into bed at night, and I think back on the events of the day, and I say, what did you get to do today? And I say, I got to change the world. Well, you might ask, how would I do that? How does one change the world? Well, I like to say that I get to do it every day through the people that I have the honor of working with, not the least of which are those gathered in this room, by the way. And I do that, we do that together, by improving the human condition. And so you might question, what is the human condition? And that's making life longer, increasing the quality, the prosperity, and the satisfaction that we derive from life. So whether we do that through how we teach, our discoveries and our research, or whether we do it through delivering clinical care, our job is to improve the human condition. And how do we do that? That's also very simple. We're a mission-driven organization. And so as long as it says in our mission, we are here to make people's lives longer, more satisfying, increase the quality of their lives here in Omaha, in Nebraska, across the plains, and around the world, it's pretty simple. We're a mission-driven organization. So I could stop at that point and say, the job is to improve the human condition, and by the way, in so doing, change the world. Thank you very much. But I have a few other thoughts, and so maybe I can go on to my reflections of my first, 100, 120 days here in Nebraska. So I have had the opportunity through great teamwork, again, many of whom are seated in this room, to travel across the state, but also travel within the city of Omaha. So I've gone out as far as Scotts Bluff and through many of the other smaller communities throughout the state. I've met with hospital administrators and boards, town hall meetings. I've met with a number of the members of the broadcast and print media in those communities, not so much to tell them what my vision is, but more importantly, to listen to them and to figure out what their needs are and to how the mission and vision and values of the University of Nebraska Medical Center and all of our clinical enterprises can work to help them be more successful. And I've also had the opportunity to visit both the North Omaha and the South Omaha communities to spend time to learn to build relationships of communication and hopefully relationships of trust, and so that we can use the resources of the university to help meet the needs in these communities as we uplift the entire region, not just sections of the community. And so what have been my observations? Well, that this is a welcoming and warm community, that it's energetic and highly engaged, and that there's a tremendous amount of pride of the members of this community in the community itself, in the culture and in the arts and in the science, in the businesses, in the entertainment industry, but also, of course, in the educational programs and in the University of Nebraska Medical Center. There's also an amazing amount of humility, tremendous humility that that this community has. And that blend of great pride and great humility, I think, is very characteristic of the community. It also, to a very large extent, has a can-do, outcome-driven approach. You know, you have to talk to somebody about this crazy idea about something I might want to do or think about. I say, sure, we can do that. Why not? Let's give it a try. Let's work together. Let's roll up our sleeves and let's get it done. I think the community is highly engaged with the University of Nebraska and all of its components, be it in Lincoln or Kearney or in Scotts Bluff or in Norfolk or here in Omaha. It really matters not. There's tremendous pride, but there's also tremendous expectation. This is a generous community, generous philanthropically, but also generous with the time and attention, but with tremendous expectations. You know, I look at, and I've met, you know, a good number of the prominent philanthropists of the community who make the university what it is today, and they don't view this as charity or as a gift. They view this as an investment. This is an investment in the university. This is an investment in their community. And as you know, as is with any investment, there's an expected return. And so I feel a tremendous amount of responsibility to be sure that we shepherd that generosity of time and that generosity of attention and that generosity of treasure, and to make sure that the return on those investments through a very diversified portfolio of education, research, and clinical care meet and exceed the expectations of the community. So what are the challenges? Well, I thought rather than talk to you about all of the challenges, I would limit my comments to only the very simple ones, the challenges of healthcare and the challenges of higher education in our society. I can probably dispense with those in several hours, but I promise to be more merciful in my comments. Let's talk for a minute about the challenges of the future of healthcare. Healthcare, we have the blessing of being one of the very best communities in the country in terms of having access to healthcare. There are only about 130 so-called academic medical centers in the United States, medical centers that teach, that do research, that provide clinical care. And the state of Nebraska and the city of Omaha has the benefit of that. And so the healthcare is as good as in quality as you can get. However, on a national level, and to a very large extent on a global level, there are only four problems, and it's just this simple. There are only four problems that have to be fixed to get healthcare perfect in the United States. One is access. There's a tremendous variability in how people can access. And by the way, that's not only a question of how you're insured, whether you're employed, or where you live. It's very specialty specific. It's very geographic specific. quality. And what I mean by that, there are pockets in this country, including this community, where the quality of health care is the highest quality, the best outcomes you can get any place in the world. But there are also pockets of health care in this state and in this community where the quality is not so great and it's not uniform, and that tremendous diversity of quality is concerning. For instance, I am not proud to tell you that I am the first generation of Americans whose children's life expectancy is shorter than mine. I'm not proud to tell you there are other countries of the world that have an average life expectancy more than 10 years longer than the average in America, and in America that life expectancy spans more than a decade from the very best to the very worst. And I don't lay that all at the doorstep of American medicine, but I do say that we own part of it, and we need to be, therefore, part of the solution. The other challenges in healthcare are pretty simple also. Cost. We spend an awful lot of money in this country on healthcare, and given the fact we have limitations in access and we have limitations in quality, we're not always getting what we pay for. And as a result of that, we've continued to escalate the cost without necessarily commensurate changes in access or changes in quality. Technology is phenomenal, but this is not just a high-tech business of delivering health care, but it's a high-touch business of delivering health care as well. And then finally, one of the areas that I'm most concerned about, although I'm concerned about all four of these as I make my way through Congress and through various legislatures in the United States, is workforce. We do not have the workforce that we need in the health professions for today, let alone for tomorrow. If you were to look at the state of Nebraska, most of the counties in the state of Nebraska are designated as health profession shortage areas, which means there are standardized metrics of shortages in physicians and nurses and pharmacists, allied health professionals, et cetera. And as I traveled across the country and as I traveled across the state of Nebraska, I am just constantly reminded of it's all about workforce. It's all about we're short now, and that many of our healthcare professionals are aging, and that where's the pipeline, and looking straight at us as a major provider, of course, we educate the overwhelming majority of healthcare professionals for our region in the state of Nebraska and beyond. The reason for that is obvious. Approximately 75% of the students that we enroll are from Nebraska and have been, and the single best way to get people to stay in the state, I've come to understand, is when grandma and grandpa live in the state. That's a really good motivating force to have you raise your family and to want to stay in the state. But we have to do more than that. We have to create the employment opportunities which serve the population of the state but also are welcoming to the healthcare professionals of tomorrow. And we're doing a lot for that, but I think there's tremendous need. Now, on the higher education side, I think the health professions are not immune to the stresses that all of higher education in the United States are feeling. People are asking the question, is higher education really relevant? Am I getting my return for 4 or 5 or 6 years of undergraduate education? Am I getting the return for all the student debt that we are now racking up as a result of this education? And there are serious questions that are being asked across this country. And even in the areas of the health professions, the cost of being educated is now becoming so high that we are either at or exceeding what I like to refer to as the elasticity limits of what we can sustain to continue to deliver those educational programs. And so we have to be very conscious about delivering that education in a cost-effective way. So those are the challenges. Those are the stress points, I believe. And this community, those are nationally regarded, and this community is not immune to any of those. The forces that constrain access to health care, that diversify the quality of health care, that make sure that we provide access across all of our communities to affordable health care, are very much alive and well in the state of Nebraska and in the city of Omaha and in the small micro communities, affectionately known as medical deserts, within our city. And the challenges around education and research are there as well. I mean, we think we do a good job, but as I love to tell my colleagues, excellence is a journey. It's not a destination. And we have to stay focused on that fact, that I believe firmly that the minute you think you've arrived at a position of excellence, there is no chance you're ever going to get there, because the horizon continues to move on a daily basis, and we need to create aspirations that are consistent with that moving horizon. So let's talk a little bit about the mission of the University of Nebraska Medical Center and our clinical system. And as you may know from my introduction, I am actually the first chancellor of the University of Nebraska Medical Center who concomitantly has the incredible honor of chairing the board of trustees that oversees the entire clinical enterprise. Now, you might wonder, what do you mean by the clinical enterprise? And while it would take me a long time to describe all of the small components of it, the long and the short of it, it's our hospitals and clinical practices that reach out to all of the communities across the state and the relevant part of the delivery of healthcare. It's where we teach the next generation of healthcare professionals. It's where we do our clinical research to be sure that the science is cutting edge and that the care is as advanced as it can be. But it is the clinical service delivery part. So I have the great honor of seeing the mission across all spectrums of the enterprise, as I like to say. So we have four basic components. Four seems to be the magic number at noon today. We have four basic components. First deals with workforce. We have to develop and find out what the needs are for workforce, although it's pretty clear we need more. It has to be affordable. It has to be quality. And so when I look across not just our medical programs, but nursing, pharmacy, all of the allied health disciplines, public health, I'm looking at growth, because I'm thinking that we have to be in a growth mode to meet the needs of a aging, more chronically ill, more healthcare professions dependent population. Now, we may need to rebalance some of that equation a little bit. We may need to do a little more in public health and a little more in primary care than we do in subspecialty care and other areas as well. And we're looking at those questions, and that's going to be very community specific, but we need to do more. And I'm very fond of relaying the fact that the workforce is going to be the single most important determinant of the future of healthcare in our region and in our country. And why do I say that? We can invest and build the most beautiful buildings, the loveliest hospitals. We can put in coffee machines that are absolutely spectacular. We can build phenomenal parking garages so that you can park with absolute comfort and convenience, and on and on. But if we don't have the quality physicians, nurses, pharmacists, therapists, and others, if we don't have a team of research scientists and public health physicians who are looking at the welfare of our communities and are there to reach out to you, then we're not going to meet our needs. On the discovery side, the research that we're doing has got to be relevant. And what does relevant mean? Well, to me, it's pretty simple. Relevant means that it's not done when the paper is printed or when the platform presentation is done or when the grant is funded or refunded. The research is done when the discovery changes a human being's life. It improves the human condition. That is to say, it makes somebody's life longer or better. It takes away their pain, or it helps them get through a difficult time in their life. And that's what I mean by relevant research. And so when we look at the well over $100 million of research that the University of Nebraska Medical Center does, we have to be sure that as we continue to grow into the future, that research is truly changing people's lives. And I know the overwhelming majority of it is, but we need to expedite that. Clinical care, I've already touched on. We need to be sure that we have the highest quality clinical care that we can possibly deliver. It's got to be safe, and it's got to be patient-centered. That is to say, the experience that people have has got to be commensurate with the quality of care. For decades, for the better part of a century since Abraham Flexner walked the earth 104 years ago, we have been very focused on the quality of care, trying to make it safe. And we've made major strides. We're by no means there. I don't need to tell you that hospitals and healthcare facilities are dangerous places in many different ways. They're a lot safer than they were. but we also have to make it patient-centered. That is to say, we have to put the patient and their family at the center of the healthcare delivery paradigm. We have to be sure that we see people on their time, that we have to meet their broader needs, and that we just don't prescribe medications, do procedures, and affect cure or treatment, but that we do it in a humane way that preserves autonomy and that it's a service industry. And we should never forget the fact that all of healthcare is here to serve and not to be served. And then finally, and most importantly, is community service for us. We are one of the largest employers in the region. That means our economic impact is in the multi-billion dollar level. Every discovery that comes out of our research laboratories, every floor in the cancer center that's opened, every clinical department that sees patients, all of our workforce development programs support this community. We support it through outreach programs, through access, through the delivery of health care, but we also support it through economic development. We support it through, when people come to this community to be interviewed for positions in our educational program, they stay in hotels, they buy gasoline, they fly through our airports, they have meals in some of the finest restaurants in the community. And all of that goes into the economic development. Needless to say, what $100 million of research or world-class care centers are. And, we are highly, highly regarded across the United States. And sometimes within a community, you don't really see the national perspective. I recently had the opportunity to look at a study that was done by the University of Nebraska Central Administration on the how does the rest of the country look at the University of Nebraska? What are the top-of-mind things that people think of? And, of course, I don't need to tell you that one of the top-of-mind things is athletics. And within athletics, people talk about football. And, and that's not a bad thing, frankly. That's a good thing. And it brings recognition to the university and to our programs. But also very top-of-mind is healthcare. We are looked at as a destination for healthcare, and if you were to sit in the admitting office of our hospital or our clinics, you would see that a day doesn't go by that patients aren't coming to us from all over the world and all across the United States for healthcare. Students are coming to us from all around the world and within the United States to be educated and to build their future careers. And our research scientists come from all around the world and go all around the world to share their discoveries, to collaborate with centers. And so we are very much a global institution with a tremendous, tremendous economic impact here in Nebraska. Not to say that we can't do more and we won't do more, but that is already a tremendous and very important ongoing endeavor. So let's talk for a minute about strategic focus. So if you were to epitomize what's on the back of my name tag under job description, I guess if you were to look at my job description, it's probably several pages long. The interesting part about it is I've asked several people, including the president of the university, the board of regents, other people, what is my job description. But I've also asked students, I've asked faculty, I've asked members of the community, and maybe you will even tell me later today and into the future what my job description is. So as I like to say, it's converting excellence into eminence. We have any number of phenomenally excellent educational, research, clinical, and outreach programs, and we need to make them eminent. A real part of my job is also to brand the academic medical systems in Omaha and Nebraska and across the world, and to have people understand that university quality care is something that they need to seek. Now, having been a children's heart surgeon for many, many years of my life, I can tell you that there are certain diagnoses. Let's pick one, hypoplastic left heart syndrome. Hopefully you or nobody in your family will ever have a newborn child with that disease. But I will tell you this, if that child is not cared for in one of the top-tier academic health centers in the United States, there is no chance for survival of that child. So when you think about defining the quality of health care and defining what we need to have for our community, there are only approximately 140 medical schools which is a key component of an academic health system in the United States. Think about how many communities there are that would do anything to have access to that quality health care. And we have two here in Omaha, so we're really, really fortunate. Clinical excellence as a genuine safety net referral system. And what I mean by that is we are the destination and have to be increasingly the destination for patients and families, for physicians and hospitals, when standard treatment, standard medical care has either been unsuccessful or partially successful, and it's time for that patient and for that family to think about getting care elsewhere or seeking additional opinions, be that through telehealth or be it through transfer of care. And I'm sure we've all had an experience where we've had a loved one who had to be transferred for one reason or another. And that is what we need to continue to be and to be looked at. And I will tell you, you know, having been an academic cardiac surgeon for many years of my life, decades of my life, the overwhelmingly large number of the patients that I saw came from other physicians and other hospitals, where they would make a diagnosis and say, okay, it's time to send them to Jeff. And we provide that service here in a very, very real way, and it's important. We are a very high technology organization. We are very, very into electronic medical records, all kinds of fancy imaging technology, be it CTs and MRs and all kinds of biological testing for genetics and other aspects as well. But we're also a very high-touch environment. And one of the things that I do is that's always been part of my life is on late nights and weekend mornings, I like to walk around the hospital and the classrooms and the research laboratories. And I like to shake hands with not only the physicians but the students, the people that serve the trays and the people that clean the floors in the hospital and find out what they're thinking about. And I watch the interactions. I recently was with a patient in this community who needed to go to our emergency room, and I stood there with him while he was being cared for. And the compassion and the human approach is incredible. So we are a high-tech organization, but we are also unquestionably a high-touch organization. We need to continue to grow the economic impact of the University of Nebraska Medical Center. And by that I mean issuing patents, transferring intellectual property, deriving royalties is all very important to what we do. But I would like to see some of those startup companies be here in Nebraska and in the Omaha region. We are very engaged in the biotechnology sector. We're very engaged in pharmaceuticals and biopharma and biotech, as we call it. And we need to find ways of breaking down breaking down silos and building bridges so that we partner with corporate America as effectively as possible and grow companies and therefore grow economic impact for our country, but also grow it here in Nebraska. It's striking to me that while the business and corporate communities that we serve and work with here are incredibly robust, I don't need to tell you, it's just an amazingly successful community in those regards. It's not necessarily regarded as an epicenter for biotechnology and health sciences research. And I think that together by partnering with corporate America, by partnering with other campuses of the University of Nebraska and other universities, by partnering with some multinational companies as well, I think there's a chance to work on that. And I think we're going to do that. Creating a global brand for us is very important. It's not just about branding internally within the organization or externally within the local communities, but making sure that we spend time to create that global brand is going to be critically important for us. So at the end of the day, when I think about the delivery of healthcare, I see it through the portal of are we educating the best and the brightest? Are we doing research that's cutting edge and relevant that changes the quality of human life? Are we providing the care that's the high quality, high touch, high access that we want? And what are the metrics of that? That is to say, how do we know that we're actually moving the bar on those areas. And I will tell you, like any large academic health system, we have not hundreds but thousands of metrics. You can measure them by numerical scores of the percentages of readmissions. You can measure them by the cleanliness. You can measure them by the number of infections. In my world of cardiac surgery, it's frequently measured in terms of risk-adjusted death rates or risk-adjusted mortality rates. But it comes down to a very simple thing, and that is when it's your child or your parent that's in the emergency room or going to the operating room or is about to see somebody for a second opinion for a diagnosis of advanced cancer, what would you expect that care to be like? We all know the answer to that question. We want to be treated with respect. We want to be treated with autonomy. We want to have access as quickly as we need it to the highest technology care there is and be sure that the outcomes are as good as possible. So when people talk to me about aligning our healthcare team, I don't like to think about aligning across metrics, be they financial metrics or clinical metrics or educational metrics. I like to think about aligning around this concept of changing the world, around this concept of improving the human condition. So I would like everybody that is involved with the University of Nebraska Medical Center to get up in the morning like I do and say, I know today is going to be a great day because today I'm going to improve the human condition. And I'd like every one of them also, when they get home at night and they're with their significant other, or they're with one of their children or one of their parents, and somebody says to them, and what did you get to do today? And the answer is, I improved the human condition. Thank you very much for your time this morning. So with that, I am very pleased to take as many questions as you might want to share with me.
Okay. This is a pretty impressive crowd here, and I should have welcomed you in the beginning, so welcome. I know some of you perhaps have not been here before. I was a little concerned about reading questions from you because most of you are medical people, and if you write like my son does, I would never get to read them. How do you see the College of Public Health taking part in your mission for UNMC?
Thank you. That's a great question. So of all of the wonderful things I've had the opportunity to be involved with in my first several months here is the recruitment of two new deans. So among other things, I won't be the newest person on campus anymore, which I appreciate. So the first dean that we brought on board is a woman named Dr. Janet Guttmiller, who will, over the summer, become the next dean of the College of Dentistry, which is a critically important position. Janet was a top choice of our search committee, of our community. She's a highly, highly regarded academic dentist. She's coming from the University of North Carolina, and she is phenomenal. But I also had the opportunity to recruit the next dean of the College of Public Health. And Dr. Khan, Dr. Ali Khan, is coming to us from an extremely highly placed position at the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. He actually is one of the two or three top officials. He's an MD, PhD, highly trained in community medicine and biopreparedness, who has an absolute passion about making healthier communities. So I said to him, well, what is your goal? And he said, well, my goal is to make Nebraska the healthiest state in the United States. I said, great, because that's exactly where I am. And how are we going to do that? And he said, well, I've got all these really cool ideas about pilot programs, and we're going to reach out to the rural communities, and we're going to do this to the inner city communities. And so it's a very long-winded answer to your question. But what I'm really saying is that the marriage between public health and patient care is going to get increasingly tighter as we move away from the way we currently pay for health care and more towards taking responsibilities for populations and communities. So Dr. Khan will be here probably on or about July 1st, unless the movers take a wrong turn on I-80, and I'm sure he will be a major contributor to this community and somebody you're really going to want to get to know.
Would you talk about the new cancer center at UNMC and what it will mean for the state.
Sure. So the University of Nebraska Medical Center and the Epley Cancer Center has been a destination for cancer care around the world for a long, long period of time. Dr. Armitage and his associates are globally regarded as an absolute go-to resource, particularly in the area of leukemia, lymphoma, and bone marrow transplantation. However, the construction of the cancer center is going to do something that is truly unique, not only for the care of cancer patients, but for the community. So as I'm sure you are well aware, the Fred and Pamela Buffett Cancer Center is actively under construction. It's going to be finished in approximately 18 months. It'll be approximately 650,000 square feet of clinical care space dedicated to the diagnosis, prevention, and treatment of cancer, and to the research that will create tomorrow's diagnosis, prevention, and treatment of cancer. What we have learned over the last decade is that no two patients who have cancer are exactly the same. You know, when somebody says they've received a diagnosis of cancer, even if they say they've got colon cancer or breast cancer or skin cancer, we tend to think of it as one diagnosis. But what we have learned over the years is that that is never the case. And the responsiveness to medication and the prognosis and the necessary follow-up and screening and even the genetic predictors of who's going to get it, under what circumstances, and what can be done to prevent that are just being discovered now. And the structure of the cancer center, and more importantly, the people that we are currently placing into those leadership roles in the cancer center, are going to build the future. Because ultimately, we want to make cancer one of those things. You know, it's sort of like probably I could ask all of you in the room what you know about smallpox. And you would probably say, well, it used to be a life-threatening disease that had a tremendously high mortality rate around the world, but, you know, it was of historical interest. And I certainly hope, and by the way, we've not eradicated it completely, although we are working on it. The same thing hopefully someday will be true about cancer and many other diseases. We are just now better understanding how to predict, screen, and what we call personalize the care for patients who are at risk of developing cancer. And let's face it, as I've traveled across the state of Nebraska, there's a lot of cancer in the state of Nebraska, and disproportionately so. And I'm sure that there's probably nobody seated in this room that hasn't had a family member who's been touched in one way or another. And we need to get on with it and do everything we can to throw the best science, educate the next generation, and provide the best diagnosis and cures. So it's a great and very, very important project. And by the way, the economic impact of that project will also be gigantic. The current direct economic impact is projected, if I believe the numbers that I'm being provided with are correct, is in the first year to exceed $100 million of direct economic impact from a combination of research and clinical care a year. And that's just direct. That doesn't count how many hotel stays, how much food people purchase in restaurants, buy gas, fly through the airport, by the way, attend a few sports events in the community, et cetera. So it's going to have a big economic impact on the community as well as become a even more of a global destination for care.
You're hoping for a one-word answer, right?
No. As inpatient volumes decrease and dollars decrease, how will UNMC fund medical student education?
Well, I think that's one of the secrets of being an academic medical center, and frankly, one of the challenges that we have across the United States, because unlike community hospitals, critical access hospitals, or even large clinical integrated delivery systems, multi-specialty practices, et cetera, we have a four-part mission. And by the way, although I listed those four parts a little earlier, I didn't tell you that they are intimately connected. There is no way to separate the education mission from the clinical mission, from the research mission, from the community outreach mission. So as a result of that, we use each part of the mission to cross-subsidize the other part of the mission. But I am very confident that academic health centers are going to have a very bright future in this country in terms of the delivery of health care, and that our role in educating the next generation of healthcare professionals is going to become increasingly important, even though it's very important right now, and that we will be able to cross-subsidize that mission. Is it going to get harder? Sure. Do I think we can fix it by putting more debt burden on our learners? I do not. I think we just have to become more efficient, and part of that is to become safer. So if we can prevent unnecessary hospital admissions, if we can keep people at home, if we can keep them in their jobs, if we can find ways of paying for team-based care as opposed to individual episode of care, that will give us a way to continue to cross-subsidize those missions. And I can't help but believe that the American economy is going to continue to depend on high-quality healthcare professionals and discoveries that come from academic medical centers for the pharmaceuticals and medical devices and technology of the future.
Could you discuss the changes in trauma centers and the effects and impact on UNMC?
Unfortunately, trauma is a large part of the clinical care of any major city in our country. And Omaha and the state of Nebraska and our region are not immune to that. And while a lot of people think that trauma is, you know, the knife and gun club locally, that is actually couldn't be further from the truth. The majority of it is slip and fall, minor lacerations, workplace injuries, agricultural farming and ranching injuries, et cetera, and of course, vehicular accidents. People still think that snow and ice and alcohol and high speeds all go together just fine, and what we find out is that, of course, is not true. And so our community needs and deserves the very best quality trauma care it can have, and that trauma level is defined by the American College of Surgeons. The American College of Surgeons ranks, rates, and accredits trauma centers in the United States, and a so-called level one trauma center is the highest quality trauma center. It provides the highest quality of care. It provides the highest degree of public scrutiny on the outcome of that care, which is something we're all interested in. It provides an educational environment that attracts the best and the brightest faculty to deliver that care and do the cutting-edge research, and also the students that want to learn in that environment. And so the decision was made, frankly, long before my tenure, that the University of Nebraska Medical Center and our clinical enterprise should be part of an American College of Surgeons accredited Level 1 trauma center, which means a 24/7 access to trauma for this community. The American College of Surgeons will not accredit anything other than a 24/7 system. And so what we want is the highest quality care that we can deliver the community, the best learning environment, and the best environment for clinical research. And so our organization made a statement a few months ago that we were going to move to this. We were actually had a preliminary visit by the Surgical Trauma Center accreditors, who told us that all of the necessary infrastructure is in place, that they think it would be wise for us to do this, to be recognized as a level one trauma center and have all of the infrastructure that goes with it. A lot of that has to do with staffing and support of critically important trauma teams, 24/7 in-house coverage. It comes exactly back to the question, when it's your child or your grandchild that was in that motor vehicle accident or fell off that bicycle or had a farming accident, who do you want to care for that person? You want the very top care that you can get, and that's what a level one trauma center delivers.
A couple of questions that are similar. Can you address the expansion of the UNMC campus? You inherited a vision. Do you have one of your own? And then there's another one. What has impressed you most about Nebraska and UNMC so far? Talk about the new development that is taking place around UNMC. Can you give us a sneak preview?
So, again, thank you. Two great questions. I don't know about the sneak preview. I'm not even sure that I'm the right person to answer that question, but I will try. But let me talk about the expansion of the medical center.
growth equals sustainability. The healthcare needs, the healthcare educational needs, research needs, and clinical care needs of the state of Nebraska and our surrounding regions are large today. They're exceeding existing capacity, and they're going to be even larger tomorrow. Our challenge is to put the right type of people in the right place, and again, to use technology, either through telemedicine and telehealth, through having satellite locations, et cetera. One of the areas that I am most excited about is what is currently known as the Regional Provider Network. As I understand it, the Regional Provider Network consists of approximately 9 core hospitals, including the Nebraska Medical Center and 8 others, who are networked together, not in an ownership capacity, but just ways of working together in order to reduce cost, raise quality, implement best practices, et cetera. And there are approximately another 60 community hospitals, critical access hospitals, et cetera, across Nebraska and the surrounding states that want to partner with us. These are institutions and physician practices who understand the fact that all healthcare is local, that is to say, community boards, community physicians, et cetera, are the best determinants of the types of services and types of access that are necessary. But they also know that by being part of a larger system, they can exchange knowledge, they can exchange patients, they can exchange research protocols, we can do better on purchasing, we can do better on benefits, we can do better on information technology exchange. So whether a patient has a farming accident out in Fremont or Hastings or Scotts Bluff, if their medical record is here because they're treated in our cancer center, we can provide the electronic telemedicine communication to get the right care, to make sure the medications are adjusted, not to necessarily transfer the patient, but just to be sure that all of the state-of-the-art care is delivered out in the community, and then when and if necessary, and only if necessary, to transfer the patient as opposed to have the reflexive response, well, send them in. Well, maybe that's not necessary. Maybe we can deliver it locally. So as part of the economic development question, if I may just, the university has owned and continues to acquire property along the Saddle Creek corridor. We are pretty landlocked right now, particularly with 4 major construction projects going on campus, as you may or may not know. Of course, you've already asked me about the Fred and Pamela Buffett Cancer Center. We're also building a tremendous ambulatory care facility, which will include outpatient offices, a set of new ambulatory operating theaters, but also a center for telehealth and telecommunications. We are building a new building as a home for drug discovery in the College of Pharmacy, and also hopefully going to be building a hotel. So we're pretty landlocked, you know, around the 42nd Street and Dodge campus. And so having space that we can look at new facilities for the university, but also look at it as a way of economic development. So there are any number of companies that would like to do some startups. And so our goal here will be to stand up a corporate entity, very much as we did with the Cancer Center, very much as we did in other parts of the state, and then to look at ways of establishing effective public-private partnerships so that that space can be used in a way that serves the economic development of the region. So more than that, you now know what I know. Probably most of you know more than I know.
I think we have time for one more question. You recently told an audience in South Omaha that, quote, we at the Med Center have a very clear mission to increase the cultural diversity of the educational programs in all the health profession programs, unquote. Will the fact that the use of affirmative action in college admissions is unconstitutional in the state of Nebraska hinder you in achieving this goal?
Well, the quote is absolutely accurate, and I believe that the more diverse the community in which we educate our students, the more diverse the healthcare delivery workforce is, and therefore the more diverse the student body, the faculty is, the better our educational programs are going to be. And this is a difficult challenge for all of the academic health centers in the United States. I can tell you, chairing the board of directors of the LCME, the organization that accredits every medical school in the United States and Canada, We struggle in medical professions, but also in pharmacy and nursing and in most of the allied health professions, of trying to create a diverse workforce. And we need to continue to find ways to do that. And we need to motivate young women and young men into healthcare careers. We need to be sure that our educational programs serve the needs of millennial learners, which frankly are different from the way that you and I learned when we were in school, and that we embrace them widely. And it's not because that African-American students practice in African-American communities and that Korean students practice in Korean communities. It's because we create an environment where we educate all of our students to practice in very highly diverse and underserved communities and feel comfortable in having that experience. And so the way you build that experience is by creating the learning environment that values that, by creating the workforce that exemplifies that, and by creating a student body that has the diversity in order to embrace those concepts. How you do that is through a combination of pipeline programs, understanding the needs of a very diverse community, and making sure, you know, we used to like to say, and I think it's very true, we recruit a graduating class. We do not recruit an entering class. That is to say, we want to be sure that every one of our students, no matter what gender, what age, what race, what ethnicity, whether they come from rural or urban communities, whether they're the first generation or the fourth generation college student in their family, that they have the same opportunity to graduate and to live their life and to fulfill their dreams and, by the way, give back to our society. And so whether that occurs through legislation that aids or retards, whether that occurs through scholarship programs, educational programs, outreach, pipeline programs, we need to continue to work on it. It's a very important part of our mission. Thank you.
We are out of time. I want to thank Dr. Gold for spending his valuable time with us this noon, and we all wish him well in his new position. I also want to thank the Press Club audience here for your insightful questions, and our thanks as well to our KIOS radio audience. We are adjourned.
Thank you. That was great.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a talk by the recently installed chancellor of the University of Nebraska Medical Center, Jeffrey Gold. Dr. Gold assumed his position at the medical center on February 1st. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, June 19th at 12 noon. At that time, we'll hear a discussion of gangs in Omaha. The guest speakers will be Omaha Police Lieutenant Ken Kanger, who's in charge of the department's gang unit with 21 years of law enforcement experience, and Janae Pankuk, Executive Director of Impact One. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.